podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone, and a warm welcome along to the Punt podcast in association with the FWA. My name is Dave Kellner, and we've got a big weekend of international football coming up with the World Cup qualifiers, and we will get stuck into the betting on those qualifiers very, very shortly. And with deadline day done and dusted, the chairman of the Football Writers Association, Paddy Barclay, talks about how capitalism is corrupting the game and discusses Spurs' Wembley wobbles. And we'll also hear from Pete Farries, Gav Puchalski and Al Ross on the domestic action. But first, it's Punt Podcast regular Derek McGovern and William Hill's in-play football trading manager, Andy Excel, on those World Cup qualifiers. A good morning to you, Derek McGovern.
Good morning. Yes, you can forget all those Liverpool v Arsenals and the transfer deadline billions being spent. This is the big one, isn't it, tonight? England and Malta, the one we've been waiting for.
We must touch on last week before we get stuck into this week. And I was listening to the podcast which Lee Phelps hosted last week, and he billed it as Liverpool versus Arsenal, Derek versus Andy. And unfortunately, Derek has won with a knockout blow in the first round.
Well, yeah, and like Arsenal, I can't put up a defence and I'm not going to bother to go on the attack. That's the worst performance I've seen from an Arsenal team, I think, in my lifetime. It was truly appalling.
But at least you've offloaded Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to Liverpool
now.
Yeah,
you've had the last laugh, but yeah, they're like getting $40 million for him. We could have had him for free in a year's time, and even then we'd have been robbed.
Let's get stuck into this week then, chaps. We have got the World Cup qualifiers, and they start tonight. 7:45 kickoff, Malta versus England first up. 66-1 Malta to win this game. The draw 16-1, England 1-33. Loads of enhanced odds and selected your odds on the William Hill website. A couple that might catch punters' attention and their eye. A Harry Kane to score two or more was 2-1, now 5-2. August is gone. We're into September, so Harry Kane will start scoring again. And England to win by five or more was 14-5, now 7-2. Derek alluded to it there, Andy. When international football rolls around, we end up rolling our eyes. Is it the same for the punters? Do they have the same sort of verve and vim and vigour when it comes to betting on international football?
No, it's quieter than the club stuff, definitely. But you do get some of the big ACCA punters getting involved on all these short prices. And again, we get the prayer mat out, hoping one of them can trip up.
Do you welcome that sort of business, or would you rather avoid it?
Oh, no, it's fine. It's like any other business. I just don't look forward to international weeks full stop, because it's just something to survive for us. Never win a lot of money, but we do win. You know, they're there and we just get through. We can't wait for the proper stuff to come back.
England are unbeaten in their last 17 World Cup qualifiers now. That's a run that dates back to 2009 and spans four different managers: Fabio Capello, Roy Hodgson, Sam Allardyce, and the current manager, Gareth Southgate. The prices here, Andy, suggest that England are going to win by a landslide. But let's not forget their record under Southgate isn't exactly formidable away from home. They've played four games away and they've lost against Germany and France and been held by Slovenia and Scotland. I suppose from a punting perspective, we're just looking at those odds and thinking, where is the value?
Well, yeah, and I always think the value is against England. They haven't got a single world-class player. Potentially, I think Jack Butland's world-class, but outside of him, I don't see anybody world-class. They're always overrated. They're always too short because English fans are like Tottenham fans, incredibly loyal, deceiving themselves, I'll tell them. But I would, the one I picked out here, and I was struggling, but I picked out one, was there's a Malta plus four goals at 2-1. England never stuff anybody. So, you know, I'd take Malta plus four. I know it's 2-1, it's a shortish price, but England won't score five.
Okay. Malta plus four in the market at 8-13. Malta plus four now, actually. So that price has got
there
bigger.
You go.
Andy makes a good point about Jack Butland as well there. England managers in the past, Eric, they haven't been proactive in making a change in the goalkeeping situation. And it looks like we're still going to have Joe Hart in net for England in the lead up to another major championship. When we all know, Derek, he's not the best keeper.
No, I mean, Joe Hart is a guy, he has performed miracles. I think I mentioned this before. He cured dandruff while still having his head stuck up his backside. So you've got to hand that to him. But on the pitch, he's been an absolute joke, and he has been for West Ham since he came back from exile in Italy. And the fact that Gareth Southgate is saying that Hart is still his number one, well, it underlines everything I've been saying about Southgate anyway. Listen, England played Malta last October, by the way, at Wembley. They only won 2-0. It was only 2-0, you know, so let's not expect a landslide tonight. This is the team he played: Hart, Walker, Bertrand, Henderson, Cahill, Stones, Walcott, Ali, Sturridge, Rooney and Lingard. If he played that 11 tonight, I'd make Malta favourites. I mean, I'm surprised Malta didn't win that game. If you consider back in England to win by a lot of goals, you need your head testing. Because they've only beaten one side by more than four goals in their last 57 internationals, and that team was San Marino. I wouldn't expect it. Won't be a landslide. I'm going to go for a 2-0 England win tonight. That's because I mean, you know, you mentioned there's no world class players in England's team. I don't see that many in Malta's team either, Andy, to be honest. 2 years ago, they lost to Jordan, and she was carrying an injury at the time. So I'm not expecting, you know, I'm not expecting anything other than an England win, but it won't be a landslide. An England 2-0 win. So if you want to actually back Malta with a 3-goal start, which I'm guessing is probably around about the 11-8 mark, maybe 6-4. I'd go for that.
It is 8-5. I don't think we've ever done an international punt podcast without you making the Jordan joke, Derek. that was a 1-10 shot, I think, coming in, Derek, and that's landed comfortably.
We laid plenty of it.
Lithuania,
so to speak.
Lithuania versus Scotland next. Again, 7:45 this evening, this one. 5-1 Lithuania to win the game. The draw 13-5, Scotland 8-13. Hashtag your odds available on this match as well. It is a four means more game as well, so you'll get a 15% free bet bonus on the four main markets if there are four or more goals in the game. A couple of interesting ones here. Robert Snodgrass to score from outside the box is 10-1. If you think either Lee Griffiths or Matt Ritchie are going to score first, that's available at 7-4. And Derek, Scotland are in must-win territory here if they stand any chance of qualification. That late Harry Kane equaliser at Hampden Park back in June leaves them with 8 points after six games. That's six behind England at the top of the group, but more pertinently, four behind Slovakia in second. And that deficit in a large part down to the failure to beat Lithuania in the reverse fixture back in October last year, Derek.
That's right. You say they're in must-win territory, but it's Lithuania. They're in rarely win territory. They seem to have played them a dozen times in the last 10 years. I think they've only beaten them once. So it's not a walk in the park. It's for Scotland. No matches, is it, for Scotland, really? I feel sorry for the Scottish fans who've gone to Vilnius. You know, it's like a sort of a stag best destination, isn't it, Vilnius? But it's actually a public holiday there. So there's no booze. It's called the Day of Science and Knowledge. There's no booze for Scots fans. Scotland fans can't understand it. Science and knowledge, I mean. I look at this game and I think, well, Scotland have got to win. You know, there's no point fanning around looking for a draw in a game like this. They've got to win to keep, you know, to claw back that deficit. Can you trust Scotland? The answer is no. I mean, the days, you look back not that long ago and they had people like, you know, Alan Hansen and Souness and Dalgleish, and now we're talking about Robert Snodgrass being their saviour. It's sad, isn't it? I can't back Scotland away from home at 8-13. I can't back Scotland anywhere at 8-13. Especially if they've got a bad track record there. Gordon Strachan he's not a manager that inspires confidence other than in the opponents. So 8-13 is easily passed over. I'm going to go for Lithuania, not to win the game because their chances, you know, they haven't got anything to play for at all. But they're at home. And so I'm going to go for Lithuania with a goal start, which is 5-4.
Scotland have lost 7 of their last 10 World Cup qualifying games away from home. They've won the other three. And Lithuania, on the other hand, have suffered defeats in each of their last 3 World Cup qualifiers. They haven't lost 4 in a row since October 2009. But they're not bad at home, Lithuania.
Neither am I, but that's not what she says. No, I'm with Derek. I could only look at Lithuania in this one. You can't trust Scotland. I actually looked at the handicap plus one and thought, there's going to be a tight game here. There won't be much in it because they're both awful. So I just thought the handicap draw plus one was worth looking at, because Scotland could win 2-1 or 1-0 and you still collect.
Yeah. That handicap price, by the way, the tie in the plus one market is 23-10 there. So that's Scotland to win by one goal in the game, basically.
Yep, and that's me and Derek are not going off to Loch Lomond for our weekend, is it?
No, they're quite disparaging towards Scotland there, you two. San Marino versus Northern Ireland next up. Again, 7:45 tonight. San Marino 66-1 to win this game. The draw 16-1, Northern Ireland in the betting at 1-33. I do like a couple of these enhanced odds markets that are available on the William Hill website and on the William Hill app as well. Kyle Lafferty to score two or more in the game was 19-10. That's been enhanced to 9-4. And the first game between these two sides back in October last year, Northern Ireland won 4-0. That was at Windsor Park. And Kyle Lafferty scored twice in that 4-0 win. And yeah, I quite like that enhancement that you've put out on the website there, Andy.
Yeah, that one might tease a few people in. I looked at the one for Northern Ireland over two goals and a clean sheet, which is small odds on the last time I looked.
3-4 it is.
Yeah, I've got this in for 3 or 4 nil Northern Ireland, so that fits that, and I think that's might be worth a little look, that one.
They have won all three of their previous meetings with San Marino, Northern Ireland, scoring 11 goals in the process without conceding. San Marino, Derek, they have got one. They have got a goal in this qualifying campaign for the World Cup 2018. Just one, though.
They are Europe's worst side if you exclude West Ham. I think Ireland will be given a tougher time if we're up against Jose Marino. 30 goals they've conceded in 6 qualifiers so far. That's fine, you know, an average of 5 a game, obviously. But the aggregate of Ireland's 3 wins over them, as you say, is 11-0. So you're looking at, what, 3.5-0 each time we played them. Ireland don't batter. You don't batter sides. Even San Marino, they don't batter. Didn't they have to work hard for the last one? It was, I think they went 1-0 up in the first half and then had to, I think, wasn't it three late goals they got? I don't know what to think about this game. I mean, how can you even begin a sentence saying, I fancy San Marino on the handicap here? Because you just laughed at you know what? I've got no idea about this game. If I had to go for a score, I'd go 2-0 Northern Ireland.
Available at 9-2 if you fancy the 2-0 Northern Ireland win. Let's move on to Saturday, 5 p.m. kickoff. Georgia versus the Republic of Ireland. More competitive as far as the betting is concerned here. Georgia are 4-1 to win the game. The draw 11-5 with the Republic of Ireland in the betting at 5-6. Don't forget, if you want your bet on the William Hill website, tweet using the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will price the market up. And we have selected YourOdds on the William Hill website right now. And the Republic are keeping tabs on Serbia at the top of Group D currently, while Georgia, on the other hand, are languishing fifth in Group D, having picked up just 3 points from their opening 6 games. And Derek, Ireland have got a tremendous record against Georgia. They've won all 8 of their meetings with Georgia, scoring 16 and conceding just 4 in the process. And Georgia, they're without a win in their last 13 World Cup qualifiers now.
I know. I can't have Georgia on my mind here at those prices. 5-6 Ireland, it looks a great bet to me. You look at Georgia, have got 3 draws in their last 4 games, and Ireland have drawn their last 2. You're thinking, the draw looks a big danger here. But this is a big chance for Ireland to put some daylight. I mean, they've got Serbia. They're neck and neck with Serbia at the top, but they can put daylight between those two and the chasing pack with a win here. I don't think there'll be any messing around looking for a draw. It's not it's one of those matches where you expect a team of like the Republic of Ireland to go there, keep it tight for 45 minutes and then nick a goal, maybe 2 in the second half against very moderate opposition. So I wouldn't put anybody off. I think Ireland at 5-6 is a very good bet, by the way. But 5-6, sometimes, you want a little bit more than that, don't you, when you're a small stake in punter. So I'm going to go for draw, Republic of Ireland, which is just over 3-1, 16-5.
What are your thoughts, Andy? Well,
I've also fancy Republic of Ireland. I've got a couple of stats to throw in here. Georgia have scored in 5 of the last 6 qualifiers, and Harry Art has almost had as many bookings as Robbie Savage. So there's an enhanced odds out there for both teams to score. Harry Art to be carded in both teams to get over 3 corners at 9-1.
Ah.
So being as I fancy 2 parts of that, I thought I'll take the chance on the corners at 9-1. So that one looks all right to me. But I'm with Derek, really. I think the Republic will win this, and I think the price actually looks all right.
We finish with Wales versus Austria, which is 7:45 Saturday. Wales 6-5 to win this game. The draw 21-10. Austria in the betting at 5-2. Enhancements here. Gareth Bale to score and Wales to win. Bound to be popular. That was 2-1. That's been enhanced to 9-4. And Marko Arnautovic to score and Austria to win was 11-2. That's been enhanced to 6-1. I suppose the first meeting, Austria with Austria, finished Wales 2, Austria 2. Marko Arnautovic scored twice in that game. 14-5 to score any time, Arnautovic. And he'll be hoping to leave that inauspicious start for West Ham behind him here, Andy.
Yeah, he didn't cover himself in glory there. But now, when you look at these two teams, Wales have drawn their last 5 and Austria have drawn 3 of the last 4. So guess what I'm going to say? I can see another draw here. 1-1 or 2-2 is where I'm looking at. They're both interesting teams in that if they did manage to qualify for the finals, they'd be one of the teams that you don't want to play because they'll just trip you up.
Mm.
If you actually look at the players that are playing for them, some of them are decent players. I'm not going to say anything about Aaron Ramsey at the moment because he's probably looking the other way. But I quite like both of these teams, and this is probably the game that if I was watching one this weekend, that would be the one I'd tune in for.
1-1, 11-2, 2-2 is 18-1 here if you fancy a couple of pops at those correct scores. Derek, how did you view this?
Well, yeah, you're right. And Wales, as you say, Wales have drawn their last 5. Austria have drawn their last 2. Austria drew at the Republic, at Wales in the last game. And so, obviously, what I'm going to go for, Wales. I think Wales are real good things. Austria they were a big disappointment in the last international tournament. As disappointing a team at an international performance as England have been, Austria, where they were that bad. And Wales have got to fail back. They know they've got to win here. You look at the way that the group standings are. These two teams can't afford to fanny around getting a draw. One of them's got to pick up 3 points. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be Wales. I think they're a much better side. They've got a true world-class player in their lineup, which Austria obviously haven't, and a 6-5 at home. I think they're a very good bet. I like the look of Wales here.
6-5 Wales for Derek. We're going to get the Naps in a few moments' time, but first, here's John Gibby with an update on the Naps table as it stands currently.
It's not been what you'd call a vintage start to the season as far as the Naps are concerned. Al Ross continues to blaze a trail after another winner last week, courtesy of Exeter, and he's now just a dot on the horizon for the rest. Lee Phelps stepped into the breach left by Dave Kowner, talked about potential value for the majority of the podcast, and then put up City -1 odds on to bump up the price of the treble. Even Sterling's late strike couldn't protect the pound. Onwards and upwards, I suppose. Let's get the Naps from the chaps for this week's international action.
Left your two names out of that there, Derek and Andy. And I didn't mention my own performance in the Naps table currently as well, which is probably for the best, Andy.
You're on as good a form as me.
And I think, Derek, you're a step behind both of us.
No, I've got a winner. I've got a win in Naps already. I had Chelsea starting a couple of weeks ago. And also, I should have had a winner last week, Brighton, 7-2 against whichever mugs you were playing, Watford. We went down to 10 men, Watford, and Brighton had all kinds of chances.
Should have, would have, could have, Derek. Yeah. You can't just keep on rolling this unlucky line out all the time.
I've got a good one this weekend.
Give us it, Derek.
Well, I'll tell you what. You ask anybody, what do you think of Spain on the international front? And they'll probably think, oh, great team, I've got a real chance of winning the World Cup, etc., etc. You look at that Spain team now. I don't think they've got a player who got an England team. That's how bad they are. You just look, I'm looking down their list. All those days of, Iniesta and Xavi and people like that playing, they're long gone. They're a rank average side now. They're at home to Italy at the weekend, and Italy are 4-1. Massive, massive price for Italy, that. Get on.
Very good. Andy, what's your best bet?
Republic or Ireland? I'm going to stick with them.
I agree. I think they're a cracking bet. 5-6, the Republic of Ireland. And for the purpose of the treble, I'm going for Kyle Lafferty to score two or more in the game. For the purpose of the podcast, I'll go 9-5, Kyle Lafferty, two or more. And that's 24.66-1. That's the treble for this weekend's action. Italy, the Republic of Ireland, Kyle Lafferty, two or more. 25-1 here with William Hill. We'll hear from the chairman of the FWA, Paddy Barclay, on deadline day and Spurs and their performance at Wembley so far this season in a few moments' time. But first, it's Alex Dunn with his best bet away from the home nations.
I've found a cracking little bet, I think. Finland take on Iceland. This is coming up on Saturday at 5 o'clock. I think that Iceland are well worth a bet here. Quite simply, Iceland are just way, way, way too good. And 10-11 is a fine, fine price. Finland, their qualifying campaign so far has been a bit of a disaster, really. They have managed just 1 point, and that came in a home draw against Kosovo. Iceland, as England fans know to their cost, are actually not that bad. They've got some talented players, but obviously a lot is made about Gylfi Sigurdsson, the multi-million pound signing for Everton, but they've got plenty of other talent spread around the team as well. They're far too good for Finland. I think they'll win. I think the 10-11 is fine, and I'd even take them on the handicap as well. If you are looking for anytime goal scorer prices, Gylfi Sigurdsson's 23-10 anytime. They've got other likely starters, Finn Bogason 17-10 anytime, the striker. Plenty for you to get your teeth stuck into anyway. Outright tip and the nap this week, Iceland, best bet of the week, 10-11.
Paddy joins me on the line right now on the podcast. First of all, a warm welcome, a good morning to Paddy Barclay, who's in France at the moment. Paddy,
yes, I've got a little house here. I mean, don't think chateau, don't think Palace of Versailles. It's a little place, but I love getting away to it for a couple of days from the madness of British society. And what better example of the madness of Britain than the transfer window? But anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about that.
It's been obscene. It's been obscene, hasn't it, really, Paddy?
It has. Dave, I'm sorry, you've got me started on something that I absolutely hate. This, I hate the way our game is disrespected by and humiliated, really, by this mad, idiotic, capitalist splurge that takes place, particularly at the end of the summer window. And I'll tell you something, I'm no Manchester United supporter, but I hope they win the league because they've done their business in a dignified way. And that kind of sets them apart from not every club. Everton, I think, tried to do the same, but there have been others. But at this time, where there's huge sums of money, you know, we used the huge sums of money, and you have to bear in mind that, you know, it's circulated, some of it. But it's the speed and the haste and the discovery that suddenly clubs are willing to pay 60, 70 million for players you didn't even know they were interested in, and they probably weren't even interested in. And this wouldn't matter if it wasn't being funded by us, the people who pay for the television subscriptions, in my case, mainly. I don't have a season ticket anywhere. But above all, the people who pay for their season tickets and their travel to matches, are they not entitled to know when the season starts who's going to be in their squad? You know the answer to that.
We're only 12 hours removed from the closing of the transfer window on deadline day, and we saw a hectic, frantic end to the transfer window. One of the big deals going through, Paddy, was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain moving from Arsenal to Liverpool. Rejected £200,000 a week with Chelsea, £180,000 a week to re-sign with Arsenal. Ended up signing for Liverpool. Is that a sad indictment of Arsenal Football Club and the position they are in at the moment, or not?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the movement of English players is indicative of a desire of clubs to, you know, to conform with regulations about homegrown and so on, or, you know, to support English academies, and that's fine. Ross Barkley would have been part of that process if he'd not been injured. He would have gone to probably Tottenham, but Chelsea wanted him even injured. But I think it's also a sign that, I mean, it's difficult to put yourself into Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's mind, but he probably feels that a clean break away from London would be better. I think he feels that it would be better if he didn't take the, what you might call the Cesc Fabregas route and make himself unpopular, where previously he was greatly loved by the Arsenal fans, whereas they understand the move up north a lot more. So I think it's a combination of factors, one of which will be that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has been at Arsenal. He's seen the difference between Arsenal and Liverpool, mainly in terms of a couple of right good spankings that Liverpool have given Arsenal. They are everything that Arsenal are not in terms of work rate, fighting, intense preparation. And I think he feels, well, change is as good as a rest. Mind you, not that he's going to get a rest under Jurgen Klopp.
He might not get in that first team either, Paddy, because they've got an incredible wealth of talent in central midfield.
Yes, but he's used to that. And of course, he will be aware that Liverpool will be fighting on a number of fronts. I mean, Jurgen Klopp certainly gave every indication when he was at Dortmund that the business of balancing domestic and European football is not beyond him if he's got a big enough squad. So I think in those terms, Oxlade's backing himself, you know, to make himself virtually undroppable. And I think it's a great move for him, a tremendous move for him. I'm not sure if he's going to succeed, but most players do under Klopp. So it's a great move for him.
Sticking with the theme of Arsenal, who are out to 20-1, by the way, to win the league. They're out to 7-4 to finish in the top four here with William Hill as well. They rejected a late bid from Manchester City for Alexis Sanchez. They couldn't quite close the deal on Thomas Lemar from Monaco, despite offering vast amounts of money for Lemar. And that means that they are left with a player that's unhappy at Arsenal in Alexis Sanchez, and a player that could go for free in the summer as well. Yeah. What do you make to that situation?
Yeah, well, I think that they should have made the decision to sell Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil. I mean, his staying's not very good news, in my opinion. They should have got rid of both of them early in the window. You know, sorry to return to this theme, but this is no time to be doing business, for heaven's sake. Sanchez, I mean, they would have had to accept a much smaller fee than 60 million, but as it is, they've got nothing except a surly based guy who's not going to be a good influence on the training pitch, or to be fair, he's usually gives value on the field. You know, maybe he'll be okay, but he'll certainly not be the dynamic, ambitious, verging on world class player that they bought. So, yeah, it's terrible business, and also the humiliation of the reports that say that Thomas Lemar, who played so well for France this week against Holland in the 4-0 France victory World Cup qualifying. You know, the fact that they couldn't tempt Lemar, even though he was sort of kind of tempted to leave Monaco, he didn't want to go to Arsenal. Now, you know, you're bound to think, well, you know, if he asked Olivier Giroud, you can you can imagine what the answer would be. Don't touch it with a barge pole. look at me. I'm France's centre forward, and you know they treat me like a squad player. So I think that it's been a horrible week for Arsenal, but it's their own fault. They didn't decide earlier on what their policy would be, and that they wanted to keep the show that they weren't a selling club. Well, that's fine if the players are are committed and the players you want. I mean, if Manchester United were now to sell David De Gea, that's a selling club. That's losing the players you want. Arsenal should have got rid of those players. Ozil, because he doesn't work hard enough. He's unprofessional, in my opinion. He's become unprofessional. And Sanchez, because he's not a team man off the field, and he's simply desperate to go.
We've been speaking about Arsenal Football Club. Let's change tact ever so slightly and talk about the other big club in North London, Tottenham Hotspur. Yeah. Because they've started their spell in this Premier League season slightly stickily, particularly at Wembley, having dropped points against Burnley and against Chelsea in the last couple of weeks. Just read you a quote from Mauricio Pochettino here, Paddy, and he says, on the whole Wembley situation, it is a perception from the media. I said it before and will say it again. It is not about Wembley. It is about our performance. Do you buy that? Is there anything in the scourge of having to play home games at Wembley?
Yeah, I mean, it is about their performance, but the thing is, performance is affected. I mean, look at Tottenham's home and away record last season. They were both good, but the home record was sensational. There's no team in the country that doesn't find it more comfortable to play in familiar sight lines. You know, it's not the size of Wembley or anything like that. It's the point, and he knows this, and every player will tell you that you become used to, I don't know, sometimes the proximity of the pitch to the crowd, it can be things like hoardings, you know, your sight, you know, when your spatial awareness is affected by all this as a player. And, you know, I wouldn't have known this, but player after player tells me this. So I think that's the first thing that Tottenham probably, I don't know, they may well have already tried this, but the first thing they should do is reconfigure the Wembley pitch, if they're allowed to do this, to the proportions of White Hart Lane. That would help, because obviously it affects your pressing drills, your little triangles all over the field. But also, even if you did that, which would help, you would still have the difference between the touchline and the crowd. So it is very, very difficult to recreate that. And it kind of, the whole point about Wembley is it's a neutral ground. It doesn't matter if you say it's your home ground. It is a neutral ground. That's why we play cup finals and semi-finals there. And the visiting teams are always going to be inspired by it, as Burnley were. I mean, they came and gave a really good account of themselves, and certainly deserved the draw. So, whereas Tottenham actually played better against Chelsea, I felt, or were closer to dominating the game. I think it is possible for Spurs to have a very good home record, but they're going to have to work even harder than they did at White Hart Lane, because teams will treat it as a neutral ground and they'll come and have a go.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Even though there's no Championship football this weekend, it wouldn't be a punt podcast without the voice of Pete Farries on it. And Pete joins me now to take a brief look at how things stand as we've moved through the first month of the Championship season. A warm welcome to you, Peter.
Hello, David.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Why are you talking in this voice?
You said it wouldn't be the same without my voice, and this is what my voice is really like.
No, hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Wolves, 3-1 favourites for the Championship. They've obviously invested really well in the summer with Ruben Neves coming to the club, and he looks outstanding.
Well, one of many, but I mean, the fact that Ruben Neves is at Wolves is absolute madness. I mean, you can look into the reasons why you might think he is there. I know I have my opinions, but the point is that he is there, and he is the best midfielder in the Championship, as he would be, for example, if he was playing the Europa League. He'd probably be amongst, if not the best, central holding midfielder in the Europa League. Mm. So they've got themselves a real talent. You know, had a couple of sloppy games. I mean, being beaten by Cardiff is no great shame. We're a little lucky, you could argue, against Brentford as well, but they've got an incredible side. It's likely they'll invest again in January, one would think, especially if they're doing quite well. I don't know, I'd have them as favourites right now, but they're certainly looking very, very good.
Where do you see as the value then in the outright for the Championship as things stand?
Well, in terms of actual outrights, there could be one or two a little further down there of interest. I think Sheffield Wednesday have done some decent business, have already got good players, and a 16-1 could be interesting. I'm not particularly sure I'd want about Cardiff or Fulham at sevens particularly. Fulham made some interesting moves toward the end of the transfer window. Cardiff have obviously started magnificently, and they kept hold of Kenneth Zahor as well, which was a massive thing. There's big bids for him coming in toward the end of the transfer window. Because, I mean, why else would you wait until the very last second to make massive bids for no reason as opposed to, you know, planning ahead? But anyway, I wouldn't look at either of those two markets. I think Borough have started a little sloppily, but are probably actually the value in the market if we're talking about the outright. They have invested quite well. A settled squad, a manager who almost took a club to the playoffs last year. They've still got a couple of good players, like, for example, Ben Gibson they kept hold of, who was heavily linked with the move away as well. So I think Borough, despite a fairly flat start, would probably be the value at sevens in that market.
Okay, and the other end of the table, as far as relegation is concerned, it's early to predict things as to who's going to end up in League One next season. But are there any teams that have underperformed and that you think have shot themselves in the foot in the opening 4 weeks?
Well, it's interesting because listeners will know, or at least listeners of William Hill's In Play Radio will know, that I start the season talking as much positive things as you can talk about a football club when I was talking about Brentford. Within the space of 4 and a bit weeks, I've gone from going Brentford at a great price this season to, oh God, no. because they've sold off all their best players, many of them going to Birmingham. Hotter's obviously gone. Harley Dean has gone. The list just goes on and on of the players at Brentford who've left. And it is genuinely a case of, at the start of the summer, I was like, yeah, they could be interesting this season, to a sort of a 72-hour spell where they were decimated. And you kind of go, oh, right. I mean, they have played quite well, even though they've not won yet. I mean, they're 11-1 for promotion. I'm definitely sure I wouldn't be back in that. But for relegation, could be an intriguing price, Brentford. I mean, they're there at sevens. There's a couple of teams that are really in trouble, I think. I think Burton at 8-11 are in serious trouble. But if you do want to make money on a 4-7, I can't see past Bolton being the value. I just can't see it. I mean, they've obviously had some backroom troubles that have been dealt with this week with Dean Holdsworth leaving the club. They couldn't sign any players outside of free transfers, don't forget, as well, over the course of the summer in the transfer window on the whole. 4-7, Bolton, you know, it's a 4-7, so people are going to slow clap me and go, well, yeah, nice one. But they are favourites in the market, quite rightly, there for me. It's the promotion market, Dave, I think, that offers the greatest value, you know.
Okay.
That was a quality and very sort of natural radio link, wasn't it?
it was. Very nicely.
Just easing our way in. There's a couple of teams here in this promotion market that are really interesting to me. For example, Sunderland have done quite poorly at the start of the season, haven't they? Not really done anything of note. They've looked a little bit kind of, only one win, two draws. But actually, that squad and the manager especially is good enough for them to kick on. They're 9-1. But Ipswich are 14s. Now, you know, at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the transfer window, Ipswich would not have been a team I would have been particularly interested in looking at. But they've signed Waghorn and Garner, who at this level are really good signings, I think. Adeyemi's gone in from Cardiff, obviously. He's a good player. Emma Hughes is a player I'm happy with. Callum Connolly, who they brought in, I think, was it yesterday, the day before yesterday? I forget now. On loan from Everton. Bersant Celina, who was a really good player, was superb for the Man City under-23s. They've got a manager in Mick McCarthy who has, of course, done it before. And all of a sudden, again, we talk about a bit like Brentford, where I was so positive to now being so worried. It's kind of flipped the other way. Yeah, okay, they were dominated against Fulham. They were knapped last week. They got battered. They got deservedly battered by Fulham. They were never in that game, Ipswich, which was infuriating. But the point would still remain that they are quite good value. Dominic Eorfa they brought in from Wolves. Really, really good defender. Can play centre-back, can play out on the right. He's brilliant. Their transfer dealings have been actually really savvy, I think. I think they might well be the value in that promotion market at 14-1. Whoa, oh, oh, oh.
So now it's time to talk League One football in the company of our expert, Gav Pushlowski. And we've got a couple of live games we're going to touch on as well very, very shortly. Bradford City versus Bristol Rovers and Portsmouth versus Rotherham on Sunday as well. But first, it's Gav on the line right now. And Gav, who's impressed you most so far this season as far as League One is concerned?
Honestly, impressed me the most is Shrewsbury. It might sound a bit daft, but Shrewsbury, with 10 points out of 12, I don't think anybody expected Shrewsbury Town to be up there mixing it, even after just four games. I've been very impressed with Peterborough United. I always get the sense with Peterborough that there's always something ready to kick off in terms of a real dip in form. Players suddenly stop scoring goals and Peterborough sliding down the league. But Peterborough, you have to say, impressive with four victories out of four, top of the table, 12 points out of 12. But honestly, hand on heart, the team that's impressed me the most is Shrewsbury at the moment with their fantastic start.
And given it's international football this weekend, a couple of games in League One are being televised live. Bradford City versus Bristol Rovers, Saturday 12:30. Bradford 13-10, the draw 11-5, Bristol Rovers 11-5. Where's your cash in this one, Gav?
I think this will be goals. I think it'll be open-ended. Bradford's last couple of games, first in the league, 3-3 draw at Walsall, 3-0 up with half an hour to play and didn't win the game. So that's devastating for Bradford. They walked off with a point, but it's a draw that feels like a defeat. Followed that up with a Checker Trade Trophy 4-2 victory at Chesterfield, although it's much changed for Bradford. So first port of call is over 2.5 goals. Bristol Rovers started very slowly and their worst result of the season, I know it's only just started, but 4-1 defeat at home to Peterborough United. And I think that really made Bristol Rovers look at themselves, because since then they've won four games straight. Away at Bury, tough place to go, were 3-0 up, won 3-2, but still won. Won away at Fulham in the League Cup, won at home to Fleetwood Town, and went away to Wickham in the Checkered Trade Trophy and walloped them for five goals. They won 5-1. So over 2.5 goals are playing this one. Bradford's home form is very good, but they have lost at home to Blackburn Rovers in the league last time out. And I actually think that Bristol Rovers are too big here at 11-5, and I'll be taking them.
And on Sunday, Portsmouth versus Rotherham. Even money for Pompey. The draw 5-2, Rotherham 13-5.
Both teams not winning games of late in League Cup action, in Checker Trade Trophy action and in league action. Both teams are drawing or losing. Portsmouth last couple of games, 1-1 draw at home to Walsall, disappointing for them. And then a 1-1 draw away at Wigan. I think they were happier with that point away at Wigan. Rotherham, on the other hand, started the season okay, walloped Southend United 5-0 at home, and then have since lost in the league to Peterborough United away and at home to Charlton. And that result at home to Charlton was devastating, because Rotherham were awful. The fans are turning on the manager. They expected much better coming down from the league above in this one. So I think this is a great opportunity for Portsmouth to register a victory and start to move up the ladder. And I think Portsmouth will play here at evens to win.
And now, importantly, Gav, it's not been a fantastic start. That's understating it, I think. Not been a fantastic start to the NAP season. I'm in the same boat as you as far as the NAPs are concerned, Gav. What's your best bet this week? This is the week, I can feel it, where you turn everything on its head, Gav.
I have 100% record in my NAP selection. I don't know what you're talking about, Dave Kellner. I have nailed four of them. All four have lost dramatically. It's so difficult to call. You either play it safe and stick with Peterborough, 9-4 to win away at Doncaster. Peterborough could be winning 5 out of 5. Of course, the Doncaster gaffer, Ferguson the junior, is up against his former side with Darren Ferguson up against Peterborough. But I think I have to play Oxford at 19-10 to win away at MK Dons. I've not been a big fan of MK Dons. They've not really got goals in the side. At home, 3 defeats in 4. We are spanning some of last season, but they've not scored in 3 of 4 games at home. And Oxford United have absolute, quality in depth with signings from Slavia Prague, Celtic, Wolves, even chucking Gabala in there. I mean, these are going Barcelona B. These are players coming in to Oxford. And I think once they start to get it right, they really will be a force. I think Oxford actually could be top three this season, maybe pushing it for automatic promotion. Bit of a local derby, not a million miles between Milton Keynes and Oxford. And I think MK Dons are way too short at 6-4. I'm going for Oxford to win this one at 19-10.
One could say we've saved the best until last. It's the man who stretched the significant advantage in the punt naps table early on in the season. The League Two betting expert, it is Mr. Al Ross on the line. Al, what's been the secret to that early season success?
I've never had such a nice intro from you in my life. What have I done to deserve that?
I did say one could say, by the way. I'm not saying that. I just said one could say.
More than just one day. Pretty much everyone is saying it, but thank you. No, it's a bit of luck and a tad of judgment, but there's a bit of luck in there as well, Dave. I'm not saying it's all you know, roses and unicorns.
Luton are 2-1 favourites to win the league after the first few matches of the season. Picked up 7 points. Luton, are you expecting them to go on and triumph in the long run?
Yeah, I had them as my pick pre-season. I think Mansfield were the pre-season favourites. They and Forest Green Rovers are the moneyed teams in League Two. But I always fancied Luton. They are the squad they were last season when they almost went up anyway. And they've added just here and there. You know, they've filled in the cracks, if you like. Not that I want to call James Collins polyfiller. If you score 20 goals for a very, very poor Crawley side, then you and Danny Hilton up top are going to get bucket loads of goals. We know Luton are decent at the back. It's pretty much that there are no real chinks in that armour. And if they can keep things going, I think they are rightly favourites to be champions.
And we've got a full set of fixtures this weekend, Al. I'm sure you've been studying these games intently as we move towards the kickoffs on Saturday. What's your nap this weekend?
Not Luton. Luton are at Lincoln, and yeah. Lincoln's home record is just—it's pretty stunning. If they keep that one going, they might even go up automatically. Otherwise, it's a playoff berth. But it's probably the hardest test of the season for Luton, and it's this week, and actually next week, because I think they're at Accrington or somewhere like that. You know, one of the other teams where it's all about the home record. But anyway, my nap this week is going to be actually two teams who at the start of the season I didn't think would do any good. I'm going to go for 19-10, which is huge. The home team, Carlisle, to beat Mansfield. That's, you might remember a couple of weeks ago, I did the same thing with Accrington and said, you know, back Accrington at home against Mansfield. Well, is this the same rough price when that landed a few weeks ago? I've always thought Mansfield are an expensively yet fairly badly reassembled team this season. I've got no time for the manager, Steve Evans, in any case. And yes, all right, when they went to Accrington, it's their only defeat in the league this season. But the team just feels so patchwork. And they're missing several players with injury anyway. Evans made 10 changes for the trophy defeat in midweek, and he's gone on the record as saying that he was thinking about bringing two or three of those in for this one, even though they haven't really melded anyway. And he's gone and got a couple more on transfer deadline day. There's, for me, that's no real preparation. If you've only just recently assembled a squad, if you're out of form, you're hit by injuries, the last thing you want is the manager wheeling and dealing in the days before a trip to Brunton Park. It doesn't work like that. So Carlisle, all right, they had a hideous home dip in the middle of last season, and hold my hands up, I didn't think that Carlisle were going to do anything this season. And I still think over the course of the year, the loss of Jabo Ibire is going to hurt them. And I like Ibire's new club, in fact, this week, Cambridge, home to Colchester. But that's another kettle of fish. I just look at Carlisle. They've got Jason Kennedy back from injury. He scored in midweek when they won the trophy. Yes, they lost at Lincoln last week, and that's why you're getting any value on them. But as I said right at the start, everyone loses at Lincoln. That's fine. And there are a couple of prices that sort of jump off the page. But in terms of pure size, 19-10 on Carlisle is going to be my nap this week.
That's it for the Punt Podcast this week. Thank you everyone that tuned in and listened. Make sure you tell your friends, and you can catch us on audioboom.com by typing in William Hill. The Punt page is live on audioboom.com, and you can also listen via iTunes. Check out the app or check out williamhill.com for all the latest odds. And if you're having a bet this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.